You look like the cover of a Chuck Tingle novel.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is Nathan Gerber. He returns to talk to us about his experiences in a mental hospital, and Molly joins in with her experiences as well.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Hello.
And Molly Glover.
Oh, it's me, Molly Glover.
And our guest this week is returning friend of the show, Nathan Gerber.
I was born into darkness, but I don't have to stay there.
We are going to talk today about spending time in mental hospital or institutions, which is a super upbeat topic, and we're going to have a lot of fun with it.
Woohoo!
Yay!
All of my experience in a mental hospital is visiting someone who's there. So I don't actually have
my ears are burning.
Yeah. I don't actually have any firsthand experience spending any time there, but Nate, you have recently spent some time in a psychiatric institution?
Yes, I have. Oddly enough, I recently tried to commit suicide, and they keep you in the hospital if you fail. So, yeah.
They keep you somewhere else if you succeed.
they put you somewhere. I didn't get to see that, but yeah. And it was very... it was a very interesting experience. It was, especially with COVID going on, I feel oddly enough, is like more isolating than it normally would have felt. I mean, I'm pretty sure it would have felt isolating anyway.
You couldn't have visitors at all.
Yeah, couldn't have visitors at all. You get there and you're locked inside an area, and you don't really get to leave until A, your COVID test comes up negative, and B, you show signs that you can move around a little bit more. But that's just into a different area that they let you wander into.
Do you have any experience like without COVID spending any time in an institution at all?
I do. I don't, but this lady does.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, it's a lot like if you've seen, I feel like Girl Interrupted is one of the movies that has the best interpretation of that experience, even though it's still from like the 60s, which makes it hard. There aren't a lot of modern movies about being in a mental hospital that I feel are really accurate. For people to watch or to see. There's a couple books that are really accurate. Wasted by Mario Hornbacher is a really good example of what it's like to be in the anorexia hospital. I think we were actually in the same hospital. But yeah, I can't even imagine with COVID, because like you're already like, they isolate you off from everybody else in the hospital. You're in a secure, you know, place. You can't just, you know, in hospitals, you can kind of just get up and walk around, you know, your floor at least, but you can't do that in a mental hospital.
Yeah. So there was one main room and like six rooms based off of that. And that's where I started. There are no padded walls, but it is all stark white. No shades, but you have windows, which is really great in the summertime. And the windows to the nurses, the nurses' staff can just look through a window at you and see them back the entire time.
Did you guys have rooms that had padded walls? Did you have any special rooms like that? We had at Abbott, there was a quiet room. There was at least one quiet room where you didn't get to go in there. You got taken there. Like that was the, you obviously need a minute. these four men are going to put you in that room. And like, that is the quiet room where you can't, we can't really hear you and you can't hurt yourself.
And that may have existed, but sure. I never had to get sent there. It was, I was a model's patient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, so, well done.
I know.
Look who's not crazy. Ooh, fancy.
I know when I was visiting Molly, you know, years and years ago, there was like she was in a couple of different states. I probably remember some of it maybe better than she would and
I'd
other
say all of
parts.
It.
Well, but there was definitely this weird having to contend with or share time and space with other people who were there, who, you know, everyone kind of had a lot of variety in social function, right? Whether that was due to medication or mental illness, or they were just an asshole. It was a little bit weird because like I was there to see Molly and I knew about her deal and my focus was on her, but also there was, you know, some other guy who may be getting a little rowdy and then has to get, you know, calm down a little, and that everyone's attention gets drawn to that, and everyone, you know, that kind of interrupts everything. How was it with other people there? Even, I mean, with or without COVID, like, how did that work for you?
The other people interrupting was definitely a thing. As a low maintenance human being, and also just someone who doesn't want to bother people. It was actually hard to get my own needs met. Like, I just wouldn't bother the nurses sometimes just because I knew they were spending a lot of time on the other patients who had more demands, bigger demands. The patients who were having a moment and
urgency
and needed to be addressed, I just let that go by the wayside. And sometimes there were a lot of them in a row, and it was just like, well, I guess I'm not going to get anything or be acknowledged for an hour or so.
I've been in the psych ward of a hospital three times. And I feel like there was always the guy that feels like he's got to tell everyone about what bullshit this is and how everything is bullshit. Did you have the everything right now is bullshit guy?
There were actually a lot of patients who were like that. So there were the more confined one that I started in, there were actually three. Two of them were super vocal. They would tell the nurses it was bullshit, tell me it's bullshit. Anyone who would listen. And then there was a third one who hated the other two. And when I acknowledged her existence, that was like our only conversation was how bullshit the other two were. And it was bullshit that they were taking up so much time of the staff.
Mm-hmm.
There was definitely a lot of people who were like, this is bullshit. That was the consensus across the board.
Now that might just be, you know, the life, the COVID life now. I mean, it mm-hmm. pretty much is all bullshit. So
that's true.
That is part of it, but there were people who also just didn't like the rules sure. and didn't seem to get it. And some of it's obstinate, some of it's the, their mental state, but there was like one guy who just couldn't get it in his head that you couldn't have a pen. You do not get a pen while you're in there. And he would constantly spend all day arguing, cajoling, trying to bribe to get a pen. That was his whole deal. And he couldn't get off of it. So
it's interpersonal drama doesn't go away. In fact, it might be emphasized made more of a urgent issue, I suppose.
Well, I mean, it's a safe place. That's the thing. And so at least for me, when I was in the hospital, it was always at the end of shit being really bad for a really long time. I never had to go to the hospital against my will. I never tried to commit suicide, unless you count starving myself for a year and a half. But I didn't have suicidal ideation. So I was never and I wasn't violent to anybody. So I wasn't on a hold ever. But that said, when I got there, I knew I was in a safe place, right? I didn't have to make a lot of decisions. And some people chafe against the not getting to make a lot of decisions versus not having to make a lot of decisions. And I think it's a lot about what headspace you're in when you go in. For me, it was the surrender was a relief because I could finally stop worrying about also having to make sure I paid rent and took out the dog and, you know, like did dishes and fed myself and got dressed and all that. Instead, there was a schedule and someone would just tell me what to do and what I should be doing. And I know one of the first few days when you were back, you were like, it's hard to get used to someone not telling me eat now, sleep now, wake up now. You know, you get used to that and it's,
Yeah, you really do in 5 days.
Yeah, like, even just in a few days.
Like, and deciding what to do with yourself and having options, really changed. It was also a little maddening while I was in there because I've never been in that situation in a psych ward facility before. So I didn't know what to expect. And a lot of people had been there before. A lot of the nursing staff kind of treated me a little bit like you should know what's going on here or what's expected. At the same time, like I didn't even know what questions to ask while I was in there. I honestly didn't take a shower for 2 days just because I had no idea what the protocol was. And nobody offered, like, hey, you stink. Yep.
do you feel like the time was, I don't want to say like productive, that sounds like measuring someone's workload, but in a sense, beyond just it being a place where you are protected, did it feel like you had a chance to fix anything or work on anything or make progress or anything like that?
I made my own progress, but it's tough to say. I do say that the experience helped me realize all the depression that I was ignoring going up to the moment, like, and just not acknowledging, not realizing how much it was affecting my own life, my own actions, my day-to-day processes. Like, I was not in tune with it. I could definitely see it after the fact. More so because I had time to sit and think, but I don't think the experiences I went through there, the people like the group chats that they did or talking with the doctor, anything like that triggered that. That was just having, you know, 5 days of nothing but puzzles. I put together eight puzzles, by the way.
So, some people are just introspective, and that is, you know, reflecting themselves. That's how they work. Molly, I know you had a lot of, I'm trying to remember it's a three-letter acronym.
ECT?
I was thinking CBT.
Oh, yeah. So I started doing DBT and CBT, So DBT is dialectic behavioral therapy and CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy. They're very similar. I'm sure that a psychiatrist could tell you the distinct differences, but they blended together for me. People will refer to it as having tools in your toolbox. So that when you have negative thoughts, particularly for me, eating disordered thoughts, that I have an ability to step back from those thoughts and not, I am not the thoughts. I know that sounds a little woo, but like that was a huge step for me to realize I am not my eating disorder. That a lot of anorexics especially will talk about their eating disorder as a separate person. Or like, for me, it's the skinny bitch in my head who is just mean. She's just like, she's a mean girl who's just mean to me. And so I have to, when I have those thoughts, I because of a lot of the therapy I've had, I'm able to say, okay, identify, like step one, identify. That's a shitty thought. Okay. Step two, identify. Is that thought rooted in reality? Like actual reality? It's like, usually no. Okay. Step three, dealing with the thought. Like, what do? Do we write it down and then burn the piece of paper? Which I know that sounds stupid, but it works for me. Do you write it down and fold it up and put it in a drawer and then look at it 2 days later and see if you still feel that way? Do you talk to someone? Do you, you know, what do you do to get rid of the thought? And that helped a lot. I'm glad that I actually went to the hospital for the first time for anorexia, because I got treated differently than I would have if they had known I had bipolar disorder from the start. And actually being in the hospital for anorexia is how they diagnosed me with bipolar disorder, because everybody in the anorexia hospital gets a dose of Paxil right away. I think it was Paxil. They get it, or Prozac, maybe it's Prozac. They put everybody on it because everyone's anxious. In people with bipolar disorder, it can trigger a manic episode. Which is what it did. and all of a sudden, whoopsie, all these nurses were like, what the fuck? And next thing I know is I'm seeing another psychiatrist who's like, hi, I'm here because I specialize in other stuff. And we think maybe you have something more going on. So we're going to talk to you about it and show you these Rorschach things and, you know, do a lot with that. And that helped a lot, because then the final time I was in the hospital was for 30 days. After a psychotic manic break. And I was one of the crazy people that Nate has talked about that was there, like, you know, that felt like a lifer, you know, who got to watch other people come and go. And I think that those, having that kind of, those kind of tools, it's interesting, because you're talking about having time to think. And I didn't have I had stopped doing my job, and I had withdrawn from a lot of life. And I stayed awake for 5 days. Not exaggerating. I hadn't slept in 5 days when I went to the hospital that last time. You'd think that I had plenty of time to think, because I had nothing but time, but I wasn't thinking about the right things. I was spiraling. I was thinking about what a piece of shit I was. I was thinking about how scared I was of getting murdered and a lot of other things, but I wasn't thinking about what I could do to get better. And I think that is the difference, is, you know, maybe you were depressed and you spent a lot of time laying around and not doing anything, but you aren't thinking in the constructive way that you can do in the hospital.
Right. That's exactly it. Like, leading up to that moment, it was just wallowing in the depression, not thinking about why I was wallowing in it.
Yep.
And that's also part of depression, is just not being able to see how knee deep you are in the bog.
Mania is the same. Yeah. Mania is the same. You can't see how crazy you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that ultimately, a little bit more detail is, I just, because I was so depressed, I stopped taking my medication. Whether or not that led to the break point, don't really know, because now my providers are saying that I probably wasn't even being properly medicated leading up, like, when I was taking my medication. So,
well, and I think with COVID right now, it's, as we know, there is an increase in people's mental health instability. Everyone, even people like who don't suffer from clinical depression, is feeling a little depressed because of everything being canceled. Yeah. Right. And, you know, stuck in your house.
I went to my doctor for my regular diabetic check a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things they always ask, because depression is a side effect of diabetes, is they always ask, you know, have you felt depressed or dejected in the last 2 weeks? You know, well, it had been like 2 weeks since George Floyd was murdered. And I'm like, right? I don't know how anybody could answer anything but yes to that question right now. It's like everybody's experiencing it. So it's hard to know that what you're experiencing is more severe and something to be concerned about. It's like, but isn't this everybody's state right now?
Don't we all feel hopeless?
Like, one of the things they would say is like, have you left the house? Are you able to enjoy the things you normally enjoy? Are you, you know, and it's like, okay, no, that's all been canceled. People? Yeah. Are you avoiding people? Like, are you seeing your friends? And it's like, no.
Well, and that was actually one of the questions in group, the ones that I decided to show up for, was like, what are you going to do when this is all over? And I was like, cry.
Define this.
But it was definitely like, what are you looking forward to doing again? And then planning, that was part of the like planning out.
Making plans for the future is something they force you to do.
Yeah,
because it's hard to do that when you are, especially with depression. Because it's like, why plan for the future when everything is shit and I'm shit and everything is garbage and I'm just going to sleep?
Get out of my head.
It's bipolar disorder. I get to have experienced both. Thank you.
Oh, man. I am recalling Molly refers to some of the things they did there as crazy crafts.
I remember.
And you're talking about doing a lot of puzzles. Other than therapy and sleeping and puzzles, how does you occupy your time there?
I mean, there's TV. One of my favorite moments is it was a Democratic vote. You watch whatever. But most of the time someone would pick a channel and you just leave it on there until you got sick of it. Started watching a Bigfoot show. And this was while I was in the more locked down area. And I just turned to one of the other more lucid people. And I was like, should people of questionable mental facility be watching things about this?
Conspiracy stuff?
Like this doesn't seem right. You got a bunch of shitty books. Harry Potter series was sitting in there.
Yeah.
When I got over to the less lockdown side, there was a DVD player, and one of the guys who was obviously a regular had brought a bunch of movies.
Norm!
And so, he would be like, hey, do you want to watch this movie? And I was like, sure. And it turns out he had been watching it every other night since he had gotten in because no one would stop him. You can rent out markers and sketch and draw or write or whatever you want to do. They're just the water-based markers.
Yep.
I did that a little bit. I did a lot of drawing while I was there.
We had endless coloring books and pads of paper. I remember I was drawing all my cartoon goats, and then that girl who kept pretending to be me started drawing cartoon pigs. Doing this, she was just copying me and doing pigs instead of goats. And it was like,
that's how we'll know the fake Molly,
right? Yeah. Okay, so fake I made Molly's this
draw pigs.
I made this in my crazy crafts.
You had a mirror,
I got to make this. In this,
there were no mirrors.
Yeah, so this was actually partial inpatient for eating disorder. So after I was in inpatient for 19 days for anorexia, and then after that I was in partial for 5 weeks, which is where you drive to the hospital and you're there from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day, Monday through Friday. So it's like a halfway house. But it's at the hospital.
your therapy becomes your full-time job.
Yeah. I don't have anything from when I was in the hospital for the really crazy thing because I kept spacing out, and then they'd take away my scissors because the nurse was like, you were just dragging that scissors very slowly and seductively across your palm.
Oh,
so you don't get scissors anymore. I'm like, oh, I was, well, that's
fair.
That's a reason. Yeah. That's on me. But I remember drawing the goats. Cause I would draw movies, but with goats. And that was like, that was one of the things I could do even.
Apocalypse even on, Now. Or,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. Or like, Legally Blonde, but it's goats. And then that bitch, started doing it with pigs. This is the same girl who snuck into my room and put on all my clothes and then said she was me. And let me just say, that's a disconcerting experience when you are suffering from a manic episode or a psychotic break, because you're like, no, she's not. No, you're not. No, she's not. No, she's not. Right. Right. I'm me, right? She's not. And I think I was super mad because she stretched out all my clothes. She was bigger than me and she stretched out all my clothes. And I was just like, that bitch. But what, yeah, crazy crafts.
So that was kind of bullshit, wasn't it, Molly?
It was super bullshit. Let me tell you about it. Let me tell you about how everything in here is bullshit.
So Molly, for you, you had the semi-inpatient, the partial inpatient. And I know that, afterward you had, medication and treatment and therapy follow-up and stuff. Nate, I know that your healthcare, like insurance situation sucks. Do you want to talk about that part of this equation?
The insurance or the outpatient care?
Any of it.
Either of those.
So first of all, I got hooked up with healthcare while I was in the hospital. So,
that's great.
Yeah, yeah. Like
insurance,
I'm sorry.
Insurance and stuff?
Yep.
Good.
So I'm set there.
We're in a good state for that. Luckily, Minnesota is one of the best states for that kind of thing.
Yeah. And plus, when you're in crazy town, they expedite everything.
Oh.
So
because they know that if for some reason you were released and you didn't have any help and they didn't offer you anything and then you did hurt yourself or others, your family could technically bring a civil suit against the hospital to say you failed him. Like he was here and you failed him.
Which, the longer story is pretty much what happened in Michigan. They were like, oh, you don't have insurance. Okay, bye. And here's some resources. Good luck. No, this time they've set me up with a bunch of appointments. I've already had one appointment. I've got another appointment in 2 days. And then I've got intense outpatient therapy. Because of the COVID crisis, I'm going to be calling into my psychiatry appointments and therapy. On the one hand, hooray, I don't have to drive anywhere. It's also super weird because the same thing in the hospital. I never saw a doctor in person.
Huh.
The only staff I saw were nurses.
That's so weird.
He was on a iPad that they brought into the room and we would talk like that. And it felt very disconnected. There were times where I was like, should I just start lying to see what I can, like, what's going to happen?
Right.
Ah, yes, the psych patient's gambit.
Yeah.
Let's find out how good of a psychiatrist you are.
which ultimately I knew that wouldn't get me out of the hospital any faster. So
they're not fans of that. Good. Usually it makes you, it's like stabbing an inmate. You stay longer.
Well, the food was fucking awful. It was terrible. To the point where even one of the kitchen people came up and like, why aren't you getting more food? I was like, don't tell anyone. Food is shit. I'm not eating.
This food is bullshit.
Bullshit.
That's great. I've said this. The circumstance is obviously sucks. It is sucks. But if that's what it takes to get to a better, more stable place, then you can view it as a necessary step or a positive outcome eventually. Mm-hmm. I know like Molly's journey was rough and uphill, but like got to a great point.
Yeah.
And have been for years and years. So
it's true.
Yeah. I had my meds check in like just a couple weeks ago over the phone, talking to my psychologist, just like to get my refill of, Wellbutrin. And it's weird. Just like having a like kind of diagnostic phone call, talking all about how you feel in the middle of an outbreak over the phone with a near stranger. It's just kind of, it was a little weird, but not so weird that it wasn't also, it was still interesting and I don't know. Yeah.
I don't take meds anymore because they shocked my brain and I can't remember October 2007.
Not much happened then anyway.
Yeah, it was, right. I mean, it was all the same. It was just the same thing. Yeah. Tim, have you, I'm just real quick question because I know we kind of, this hasn't really been a Tim episode, but I'm just curious.
Not really.
Like, how have you had people close to you in your life? I know you haven't really struggled with any kind of mental illness, but have there been people really close in your life that have, or is that just really outside of your sphere of life?
It is outside of my sphere of influence. I think all of my immediate family member, including myself, went through a lot of therapy after my dad died because it was unexpected and
grief, you know, counseling.
It was grief counseling. And I have, I mean, I'm not going to say I have clinical depression, but I've struggled with depression at times in my life, and I've gone to see a therapist about it from time to time. You know, but nobody has ever reached the point of needing to be put into an institution for any length of time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's really, you know, the 90% of what I have and that I know is wrong is pop culture, and just about every pop culture depiction of a mental institution is like a horrible hellscape where people are treated like shit, which certainly, I mean, they absolutely exist, but
don't go to Fairview Riverside.
Yeah. So, you know, they exist
in Southdale.
They even exist in this part, but I think most of them are not like that. I think. You know, when people think mental health facility, they think one flew over the cuckoo's nest.
Yes.
Right.
As the default. Like, this is
bars on the windows.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then they think padded walls because, you know, that's what we hear, right?
Yeah.
There's walls and they're padded.
When I tell people that I had electroshock therapy, I find it very interesting because by and large, their response is like horrified.
Right.
Horrified that happened to me and that that's why I've actually gone to great lengths a couple of times to explain how it was, because honestly, it was like going to the dentist. You went into a white room with a chair that reclined and they gave you an IV and then they're like, okay, count down from 100. And they put some little things right here on your head and you counted down from 100 and then you woke up and you'd peed yourself. And then you didn't really remember why you were there. Like, so.
Your dentist than my dentist.
Different to me.
Well, maybe you need to try that sedation dentistry, Nate.
and I didn't beat myself.
Oh,
it sounds violent. I mean, even the term like electroshock treatment, it sounds like a violent thing. Electricity is dangerous and it kills people.
It is electroconvulsive therapy, ECT. Electroshock is not a term people like to use anymore, but I like to use it because otherwise no one knows what the fuck you're talking about.
Right.
But I think, Tim, you make a really good point that there isn't any good media about it because it isn't very interesting. And that's the problem.
We don't talk about mental health, right?
But also,
mental health is boring.
It's not very interesting because what it was really was day after day of the same fucking thing, you know, with punctuated by brief moments of somebody else having a really bad time. And it feels very voyeuristic to be like, let's make a movie about how everyone's fine except for when they're not, you know. And I think you've seen like 28 Days where they talk a lot about alcoholism and you see a lot about alcohol rehab and those kinds of institutions, but just not, people don't want to talk about that a regular person like myself can go fucking crazy and need direct immediate intervention, that especially if it doesn't relate to suicide. I feel like a lot of people understand Nate's journey of, you know, suicide attempt and then recovery. That's something we see a lot in the media. Even if they don't understand it, people for some reason are able to be like, oh, sure. But just like, no, I just snapped isn't something people can relate to. And I actually lost a lot of friends when that happened.
It was a strange time.
Yeah. Mental health. Wolfman's a help. It's a funny comedy podcast, comedy show.
On that note, hey, we have five questions from a listener that we're going to answer, the four of us.
Neat.
Guess what listener it is? Jeremy Stomberg!
Everybody take a drink. He didn't mention it all in the last episode. What's wrong with us?
So he finally sent in his five questions.
About
time. He's been listening to the show since day one. In fact, Jeremy will often text me and say something, and I don't understand. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's like, oh, the show today.
Recorded that a month ago. Like, I fucking remember what we were talking about.
He'll be like, Tim was right and you were wrong. I'm like, okay.
I doubt it.
There's no way Jeremy ever texted that to you. That never, ever happened. You just made that up.
All right. So here we go. Five questions from Jeremy Stomberg. Question one. Think of your favorite band. If they never existed, how much would the world change? How much would your life change? I'll start what y'all think.
Sure.
So my favorite band is Nine Inch Nails. Mm-hmm. If they never existed, I don't think the world would change much. We would have several fewer amazing Oscar scores. And like, cause like Trent Reznor did the music for the show, The Watchmen, did the music for, the social network, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, you know, but really, I don't think that the world would be poorer other than they wouldn't have his music. How much would my life change? I would not be the happy, well-adjusted person I am if I hadn't found Nine Inch Nails at a very important time, which was when I was 15 or 16, really just starting to experience what I now know is bipolar disorder and the dark mania that was coming with it. That Nine Inch Nails has helped me in so many ways. The album With Teeth really got me through the worst part of my eating disorder and really helped me crystallize a lot of how I was feeling and be able to make someone listen to something and go, this is me. This is what I feel. And I think that my life would have been poorer for it, but I honestly don't know. I think it really helped me experience my darker side and tap into it in a creative and healthy way.
Nate?
I'm going to take band to mean group.
Sure.
Because if you said artist, then I would have been like someone else.
No, band is a group. I think so.
Which would be God Lives Underwater. It was a group that showed up in one of the lowest points when I was very young and starting to really be able to sink into my depression and help me understand it a little bit better, because the lyrics and the tone of the songs was this, like, it sucks, but, like, you can work through it. Mm-hmm. Like, things are tough. A lot of people have it tough. It would help me connect in a healthy way.
You feel less alone because someone else is feeling the way you didn't realize you were feeling until you heard it.
Yeah, and it wasn't just like I'm sad and I want to die. It was I'm sad and I'm working through it more kind of stuff. I don't think the rest of the world really even noticed they existed.
Yeah, never heard of them.
but we would be missing out on one of the best David Bowie covers ever. Also a remix of Bloodhound Gang's The Bad Touch.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, really great remix.
Which Bowie song did they cover?
Fame.
Oh, good.
And it really, they did amazing things with that song. You can find it on YouTube. And it was one of the last songs they recorded before the two guys split. And eventually one of them died.
Tim, do you have
we'll do that.
Yeah, I was trying to choose between a couple that are my favorite, but I'm going to go with R.E.M. R.E.M. is probably my favorite band. I really got into them when I was in college, and I think personally they had a big impact on my musical tastes going forward. And I think that I mean, unless you're talking about bands that really genuinely move the earth, you know, which is like the Beatles and maybe U2, which is another, it's the band I nearly chose, but I really think between the two of them, REM really is my favorite. So I don't know that they moved the earth, but I think they did have a pretty significant impact on music when they were around, and they had a significant mm-hmm. impact on, because, you know, when they got to be pretty big, they were essentially a smaller group, and they had a pretty big impact on alternative music becoming a thing mm-hmm. that people mm-hmm. listened to, and taking some bands that might not have found the mainstream, and they found the mainstream because REM existed and people started looking for other bands like that. Yep. So, I mean, in that sense, I feel like that if they weren't around, that might not have happened. But on the other hand, it probably just would have been a different band that made that happen. So sure. There, that's my answer.
Nick? Funny story. When Barack Obama got elected president, a conservative acquaintance of mine, like, posted, "It's the end of the world as we know it." Uh-huh. And I was like, you're misusing this song.
Yeah, you don't.
So racist.
Like, yeah, she's like, well, songs can mean different things to different people. I was like, he's gay. You're very liberal.
This one's pretty obvious.
This band you chose, I think would have a problem.
Disagree with you 100%.
Yeah.
Nick, what about you?
I think right now, these days, my favorite band is Run the Jewels, Killer Mike and LP, and Molly and I've seen them a couple times. How would my life be different without them? Would probably be Run the Jewels is really great music for this time in our country politically. It's made me nostalgic for a lot of music I listened to when I was like 16 to 19, like Agent Orange or like The Damned or Rage Against the Machine is a really great answer. So I feel like how the world would be without Run the Jewels would be a hard question to answer, because the effects of it wouldn't be seen for 10 or 15 years, when the people who are listening to that music young are going to like get those messages. Like I would say Bernie and stuff
with Killer Mike, right? Like,
yeah, Killer Mike went on the campaign trail with Bernie for a minute mm-hmm. last election. And then did their barbershop talk interview and stuff. And we'd have a lot of commercials that had less cool music in them for sure. But I feel like there's probably some young people who are getting fired up by their music, the way like Rage Against the Machine got me politically interested and fired up when I was young, that would probably be missing out on that. And I'd have less nostalgia for stuff I liked, ironically, with this newer band that's my favorite. Yeah.
Question two. What is the thing you find most annoying about your spouse or partner? Do they know your feelings on the matter? This is a fun question. You want to go?
I hate the way my partner folds socks. Like, just despise it. Wish she wouldn't touch it.
What does she do?
She like makes this like what is the badminton? It looks like a badminton. Out of socks.
Oh wow!
At the end of that.
Oh jeez. Oh jeez.
Like, no, you fold that into like a tube that you can stick in your pants on demand.
What do you mean, fourth grade?
Does she know how you feel about this? Have you had this conversation? Oh,
It's not a conversation worth having.
Yeah. All right.
The thing that annoys me the most about Nick is when he asks me a question and then tunes out in the middle of my answer and like goes back to his phone. But we have talked about it just recently, and it's not necessarily his fault, because there's me. But in the phone, there's literally everything. So, like, it's hard to compete with literally everything.
My attention span is not stellar. That's true. Tim, you want to?
She listens to this podcast, so I'm terrified by this question. But the thing that annoys me the most is that she uses the bed as a table. And by that, I mean, when she decides it's time to clean in the bedroom, everything gets put on the bed. Now, that wouldn't bother me so much if what inevitably happens is she's not done at whatever point she comes downstairs for us to hang out and watch watch movies or TV shows together. So then when we go up to bed at like 1 or 2 in the morning, the bed is covered in shit.
Yeah,
it's just like, come on.
I can see that. I can see that. Yep.
So yes, she knows how I feel about this because we've had conversations before we've gone up to bed where she's been like, it won't take me long. And I'm like, oh, God damn it. You did it again.
I say that to Nick before we go to bed too.
Yeah. It's like, I feel that, Tim, because so that ties into one of mine, actually, my answer, actually.
One of yours.
You just asked one. So, and I don't think I've even like voiced this. So, hey,
exciting.
Here's something new. But it's so like when I'm a night owl. And Molly is an early bird, right? So I would like stay up until 1 or 2 a.m. if I had my druthers, and she would prefer to rise like with the sun at 6:30 or whatever. Mm-hmm. So when I want to go to bed, I want to like go upstairs, brush my teeth, get in bed, and go to bed, and that's it. And like once I have made the decision to go to bed, I would like to be laying down and preparing to sleep within 10 minutes at the most. Mm-hmm. 5 minutes would be ideal. When Molly wants to go to bed, it's like a half hour process. It's like I'm going to lay down. I put my CPAP headgear, Darth Vader mask on, and I lay down and I close my eyes, and then it's time for a conversation. And it's just like, no, see, I came to bed because I want to go to bed. I've been awake this whole time. If you wanted to have a conversation, you could come downstairs with me and stay up and have a conversation. It's so harmless. It's so benign and it's so stupid. But like, it's just one of those things where it's like, I actively take a moment and be like, this is such a childish thing to be annoyed or angry about, that like, I just need to get over it real fast because I don't want to go to sleep annoyed because that's stupid.
Yeah.
So, and I do get over it fast.
The worst part is he'll be like, I'm going to put in earplugs. And I'm like, okay. And he'll put in earplugs. And then like 5 minutes later, I will forget he has earplugs in. And my brain will go, you should ask Nick about that thing we have to do next week. And I'll be like, hey, next week, do we have to? And he'll just go, God damn it. Hold on. Boom. What? And I'm like, oh, it's nothing. Never mind. He's like, no, now you're telling me. And I'm like, okay.
Now it's going to happen. Yeah.
Yep.
The earplugs thing. Yes.
And this doesn't annoy me too much because I don't know if I've discussed on this podcast, but I can basically fall asleep anywhere. At any
between
time.
This and the REM, I'm wondering if you're my dad.
Like, I don't know, maybe. Like, but so it's like I will get into bed and I will decide it's time to roll over and fall asleep. And if Pat decides it's time to have a conversation, that will not stop me from falling asleep. I will fall asleep.
You lucky bastard.
I'll fall asleep in the middle of the conversation. I'll like answer her, and like the next thing she asks me, I won't answer anymore, and she'll be like, "Oh, this conversation's done because he's asleep now."
Yeah.
It's not something that annoys me. It probably annoys her more.
All right. Question 3. You have to lose one of the types of taste: bitter, salty, sweet, umami, or sour. Which type of taste do you lose?
I'm sorry.
Bitter.
Bitter. I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
Of anything.
I feel like if I lost bitter, it would be okay because I would still have sour.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be okay. Yeah, I think I'm going to go bitter as well.
Pretty much there's a reason I don't like alcohol at all, and that's because I don't like things that are bitter.
All right.
All alcohol tastes bitter to me, so that's I'm totally fine with that being gone.
That's fair. Nick, what do you
I'm super tempted to pick bitter as well because like my two favorite flavors are spicy and then sour.
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to pick sweet because I think if I had the craving for sweet things and that was an insatiable craving, that eventually I would just be like, well, no point in eating ice cream, I guess. And I would just get over it, because it would be like, I can eat something that's not full of sugar that I get that creamy taste with.
That's a really good point. Yeah. If I could give up the sweet tooth, that it'd be,
still bitter.
I like tasting sweet things.
I do too. That's
fair.
Yeah. All right, question four. What closely held non-religious belief that you used to hold have you been challenged on and had your mind changed about? I will go first because you want to go, Nick? Yeah?
No, please.
Okay. So mine is leggings as pants. I have Facebook posts from me from as recently as 7 years ago where I am like, oh, you stupid, lazy bitches. Stop wearing leggings as pants. Put on pants. You're an adult. Oh, it's so disgusting.
Put a skirt over it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, put a skirt over it. No one here wants to see your ass, right? Now then, I got really bad. My arthritis in my knees got really bad in 2016, and I couldn't wear jeans. And it was winter, and I had to wear leggings. And I was, you know, still covering my butt with tunic tops. But after a while, I just started to realize, you know what? You don't want to look at my ass? Don't look at my ass. You don't have to look at it. It's not like it's a requirement. And I will wear my leggings. I do still get Ponte leggings, which are super thick. I don't get the kind where you can see my underwear through them. I'm a big believer in very thick leggings, but I changed my mind on that. I have publicly admitted I was wrong to the bitches, the lazy bitches of who I am one.
The comfortable bitches.
Leggings as pants are great because I will be able to kick your ass because I have so much mobility.
Good call.
I within the lifetime of this podcast, have totally come around on the concept of content warnings. When we started, I probably made a lot of arguments that I would hear today and think are bullshit, and be like that it's coddling, or the excuse that people are responsible for their own emotions. And like, I still believe that people are responsible for their own emotions, but like, there's nothing wrong. Like the MPAA ratings in front of the television show or a rating on a movie doesn't bother me. So why would I be bothered by effectively the same thing literally anywhere else if it helps some people avoid like trauma or even just having a shitty day? Like that's nothing. That's so little effort. And
I
to the point where I can't even think about or imagine what my arguments would have been previously, because it's so obvious to me now.
Yeah.
That's good.
Tim or Nate?
Sure. I, within the life of this podcast, have really come around to the idea that all cops are bastards. I would have argued that is not the case. I would have at one point argued that was not the case, that there were good cops, but I can't do that anymore. and it took like looking at stories that people were telling and thinking about the concept that there aren't cops stopping these other cops from doing this shit. And if you protest and say, well, I don't do this, it's like, yeah, but are you stopping these other fuckers from doing it, or are you supporting the entire system that's corrupt and broken? So yeah, that's something that's changed for me since the podcast started.
Nate, what are you thinking?
I'm gonna do a little bit of confession and just show some growth. When I was a teenager, I was of the mindset that homosexuality was not bad per se, but just
less not than.
Like icky.
Yeah, less than not. It's hard to like explain now that I'm older, grown up. Part of it was for my family. Part of it was trying to think about this thing that I didn't completely understand. Definitely voiced some opinions that hurt people that I knew at the time. Now, keep in mind, I was like 14, 15,
sure,
16.
Sure.
I thankfully grew out of that, realized that I'm bi, and
almost like there's a little self-hatred going on there.
And just, you know, grew, like, I know I said some hurtful stuff back then, feel terrible about it, apologize to everyone involved, but definitely came to understand myself better and a wider community that I had no experience with.
I feel like everyone else's were really like serious and mine was leggings. But I will say one thing that I changed my mind on since the start of this podcast was the death penalty. I used to think the death penalty was good in some situations. And now I'm 100% against it in all situations. So there is that. All right. Okay. Just to soften the leggings situation, because it just felt a little
I thought
much.
That was a great answer. Right.
Thank you. Like, when you think about the crimes of the death penalty versus women wearing leggings as pants, it's obvious which one is more important. But
I nearly answered wearing shirts untucked, Molly. So, I mean,
Okay. I feel better. All right, finally, question five. You have to leave your hometown forever. And I'm going to say for hometown, let's say the place that you like the best. It doesn't have to be the place you were born, okay? Sure. You have to leave your hometown forever. You have 1 hour to pack. What is the most important thing you own that you leave behind?
I mean, with 1 hour to pack, I'm probably going to leave most of my nerdy stuff behind, like my Lego Cinderella castle and my Lego Saturn V and shit like that. Which, you know, it's cool and I like being able to look at it, but I've only got an hour. Clearly, it's an emergency. It's got to stay behind.
Mm-hmm. I think this is hard. Art and photographs, whether that's like nerdy art we have up on the walls or you know, art that's like been commissioned. Like we have that oil painting of Hot Pocket that probably wouldn't come with us. It's a huge ungainly oil painting. I mean, that's super important to me. Our wedding pictures and the physical pictures are probably what would get left behind.
Yeah, I'd say my wedding dress. No. It's not coming. I still have it. It's in a box. But it's not going to come with us.
I'm a bit of an idiot. So, like, if I only had an hour to pack, I'd leave, like, pots and pans.
Yeah.
I would leave really important stuff behind. Like, I'd be like, oh, grab the computer.
Yeah.
I might be able to plug it in somewhere. Like,
forget your birth certificate.
I would absolutely forget, like, something super important.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, nuclear fallout. We're going to have a winter. I didn't pack warm socks.
Yeah. Everyone's like, weren't you from Minnesota? You're like, shut up.
Yeah. I've also had frostbite on my feet. I'm
oh, my
dumb.
God. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, thank you, Jeremy. 5 questions from Jeremy.
Thank you, Jeremy.
If you want to send us your 5 questions to answer, send them to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. If you are one of our patrons, you're not only listening to this episode potentially weeks early, you also will get bumped to the top of our queue if you send us your questions, and be sure to indicate that you are a patron in the subject line so Molly can bump you up. If you're a patron that's throwing us a couple bucks a month, you also get to see video of our recordings, because we're recording everything remotely right now with Zoom. So you get to see into our lives and our faces, and I'm not sure how that's really much of a treat for you, but thank you nonetheless. Otherwise,
there's an Indiana Jones Mr. Potato Head behind me that you could see right now. It's right there.
I see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's the picture that Molly's talking about. I have this backdrop that's up, which is great for people to listen to. But behind that, you can see the comic library.
Oh, the very
shelf
nice.
Of books and books and books. So, but yeah, We're Geeks Without God. That was delightful for our listeners. If you want to see what you missed out on right then, just chip us a couple bucks. And we'll be back with another episode next Tuesday. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.
And thank you, Nate.
You know what? This whole podcast is just bullshit.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
They send us in 5 questions about what Nate's doing there. Then we'll answer.